This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello, and welcome to episode 175 of the USDF's official podcast. I'm your host, Chris Stafford. And a reminder that the views of the host and the guests of the USDF podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of the USDF or its members. On this week's episode, as the breeding season approaches, the general manager from Hilltop Farm, Natalie Baradinas, will be here to talk about matching your mare to a stallion, and Haggard Equine Medical Institute veterinarian Karen Walsdorf will be telling us about embryo transfer and other options for mare owners. And we begin, as always, with our latest news. First of all, the 2018 USDF Online Stallion Guide is due out mid-February. This is an annual online stallion guide released by the United States Dressage Federation for the dressage community. This is an interactive guide that has links for video and social media. And whether you're interested in breeding your mare or looking for a breeder with offspring already on the ground, this is a great way to learn more about dressage breeders throughout North America. So keep an eye out for this guide to be posted on the USDF website's publication page at usdf.org. And the USDF is pleased to announce three exciting and diverse opportunities for sport horse education in 2018. In regards to the upcoming opportunities, Christy Wysocki, chair of the USDF Sport Horse Committee, says, "We're very excited about the programs planned for 2018 in various parts of the country and are thrilled to be working with some new venues, in addition to venues we've worked with many times before. We'll have programs in both the South and the Northwest this year, areas that have not held sport horse educational events for quite some time, and there will be multiple opportunities for members and non-members alike to partake in a variety of sport horse-related events." And you can find out more information about these calendar events on the USDF's education calendar. And now for our first guest this week, Natalie Baradinas, who is the Managing Director of Hilltop Farm in Cullera, Maryland, and is also Chair of the Sport Horse Committee. And she's here to share some great advice on how to match mares and stallions. Hello, Natalie. Welcome back to the program.
Hi, Chris. Thank you.
I guess it all really starts with the brood mare, doesn't it?
It does, absolutely. The stallions are sort of the icing, but the mares are the absolute most important base to any breeding program.
Well, why don't we start there then and look at the qualities that you would want people to first of all consider, instead of just being emotional about this and thinking they have the most wonderful mare and she would be wonderful for breeding. What would be your first points you would tell them?
Sure. So I, as much as we love our horses, I believe no horse is perfect. So we're always looking for areas to improve that we can strengthen, but we want to start with breeding stock that have no major holes. And so when I first start talking with somebody about their mare and what they like about her, what they'd like to improve, my default question is, if the least desirable thing about her, the thing you most want to change, if you can't change that piece in the foal, would you still be happy? And if the answer is no, then that's not a good mare to start your breeding program with.
That's good advice. Okay, so then what are we looking at in terms of those qualities then? Let's drill down a little bit deeper, Natalie.
Okay. Character, absolutely, for our brood mares. Ground manners, their reactiveness. The foals are going to spend the first 4 to 6 months with those mares. They're going to mimic those behaviors. So you want a great character on your mare. You also want that from the traits you're going to breed through and what she was like under saddle and riding. Riders each like different energy levels, different responsiveness, different, you know, some of us drive sports cars, some drive sedans. So energy and temperament can sort of change, but the character of who that horse is, I think, needs to be very consistent from day to day. And because a lot of the market is amateur riders, whether they're breeding for themselves or they're purchasing a foal and you're a commercial breeder looking to produce for that market, that character and temperament and rideability, those characteristics, I think, are the key foundations to start with. Besides that, of course, you need an athletic mare. You need a mare that's able to do the job you're breeding for. If she's a wonderful hunter but didn't make it necessarily as a dressage horse, she's probably not the right mare to try and breed your next dressage prospect from. Soundness, I think, is a piece that we often forget to focus on as much as I think we should. You know, it takes a long time to develop a competition horse, and we need sound horses that can do the jobs easily that we're asking for. So it's okay if a mare has an injury, but what you want to evaluate is, was that injury related to her conformation, or was it a, you know, accident in the field or a bad slip or something that's not conformation related that wouldn't affect being passed on to a foal. For us, looking at pedigree is important, particularly if you're looking to breed for sale, but it also, even for the individual breeder who's intending to have one or two foals from their mare, that pedigree sort of serves as your treasure map that can help you sort through what might I get or what direction should I look, and can help minimize the unknowns or the risks with breeding to some extent. Fertility is often overlooked for broodmares, and it really should be an important consideration. You know, is she able to comfortably be a broodmare? Does she reliably get in foal? For us personally, we tend to like medium size, medium bone sort of mare, modern without being super, super refined and ultra leggy. We like a very consistent character. Again, energy is good. To be a Grand Prix horse, they have to want to go, but we want that to be a focused energy and a directable energy. I look for a mare with a really good top line, especially the neck and loin connection. Of course, three good gaits, but particularly focusing on the canter quality. And then back to that rideability and trainability, and what feeling does she give you as a rider, and how hard does she want to work? Those would be the traits I'd be looking for in a good broodmare prospect.
And you mentioned there, of course, the temperament of the mare. Let's talk about that matching with the stallion. How much do you consider that in your stallion selection?
So, we look at the different stallions, we know some tend to come from lines, or they themselves tend to be a little more sensitive or more on the higher energy level. We also have different lines and different stallions that we know can help cool down or moderate a hot or sensitive mare. So we can see, particularly on older stallions where we've got a lot of foals to evaluate and horses that have developed, we can see some of those stallions that will impart a consistent effect on temperament. But again, back to my earlier comment that the foals spend those first months with their dam. And I think a lot of the personality and character ends up coming far more strongly from the mares than often the stallions.
Now, what about the stallion selection itself? Looking, we've looked at the mare and what traits you would consider for her. What about the stallion and the selection for that particular mare?
So your choice on stallions, obviously you evaluate the individual in front of you and what phenotype and genetic material they have behind them that's going to complement your mare and your goals. But even more important than who that stallion is an individual is, what are you seeing in their offspring? Because horses don't always breed true to what you see to them as an individual. So it's evaluating the stallion, but also their offspring. For dressage riders, of course, we want an uphill way of moving. Again, that good neck, strong top line, a really good engine behind. We need that for the collection and the development. The trend right now for breeding tends to go towards a modern type that are fairly leggy proportionately, not necessarily huge in terms of height and size, but quite leggy. We want naturally supple, elastic moving horses. Again, with a focus on the walk and the canter. Really good mechanics. I like to watch horses in transitions even more so than just the basic gaits. What is their innate reaction? You know, do they sit behind? Do the withers come up? How do they stay in the contact through those transitions? And looking for, obviously, we want horses that have the conformation and the movement in terms of stallion selection that would lead us to success in the dressage ring. My own preference for most breeders and most mares is to lean towards a little bit older, a little bit more proven stallions, both in terms of their own competition record, but also then we see, you know, their offspring coming up under saddle and have a better sense of what they consistently sire for their foals. With each generation, we're breeding better horses, and or we should be breeding better horses. And we can play with some of those young stallions and the kind of hot up-and-comers on the really well-established mare lines, on the very proven producers. But for the mare that perhaps hasn't had a lot of foals, the person who's new to breeding, I would look for the proven stallion, both in terms of his own competition record, but especially that of what he's been able to sire for offspring.
And you mentioned the trend towards legginess, if you will, for want of a better word. What do you think determines these trends?
It's certainly driven by sales a lot. You know, let's face it, we're following whatever the trends are coming out of Europe is where the U.S. breeding market is following. So watching, you know, watching what's selling for high prices at the auctions, watching what's doing well in the young horse classes. And everybody likes a pretty horse. So, you know, that a little bit more refined in type, a little bit more blood and go, a little bit more sort of the ladies ride has, you know, been the trend for quite a long time in sport horse breeding. The longer legged, a little bit more knee and articulation to the movement, you know, has come from certain lines of stallions that have been popular, and they're popular because of the sellability of those offspring, especially as young horses. You know, I think that drives it a lot of what sells, and people right now like that long leg, elegant look. They like a little bit more articulation, I think, especially for the collected FEI work that can help, as long as it has the power still in the hind end and the ability to sit. And we want those big expressive gains.
Okay, well, there's a good selection for everybody to consider when they're looking at trends. Now, in terms of technology, Natalie, you know, this applies to all walks of life, isn't it? And not least of all in the veterinary field, in the breeding field. What have you taken advantage of at Hilltop there in terms of technology?
You know, in all honesty, here at the farm, a lot hasn't changed in how we manage our mares or stallions over the last 10 years or so. You know, I think the basic good care and horsemanship goes a long ways towards managing breeding animals as well. We do a bit of embryo transfers. That's certainly not a new technology. It's been around for quite some time, but we are seeing more and more of our breeders utilize it, including also the option of freezing embryos. I think it has its place. I think it can be a good tool to use, but I also think from a financial perspective for your breeding farm, you have to look at, if I'm doing an embryo transfer foal, inherently that foal is going to cost at least $5,000 more than to get it on the ground than the foal that the mare is carrying naturally. So I have to decide, is that particular mare that strong of a producer, or is she doing that well in competition that I don't want to pull her out from, that extra expense is worth it for that foal? And so we use embryo transfers fairly sparingly for our mares. But for instance, we have one this year. She's been one of our really good producing mares that we are going to pull a few embryos on, because we want to be able to get she's starting to get a little older, and we'd like to get more foals coming from her. So it's good for those specialized uses, but it wouldn't necessarily be something that the average breeder would need to take advantage of. Freezing embryos, there's starting to be some like embryo online auctions that we're seeing, particularly coming out of Europe. I think seeing the jumper breeders embrace that a little bit more than the dressage breeders. So again, I think that's sort of a look to the future, but not necessarily a concept for every breeder. One of the techniques that is, they have the capability of doing sexed semen, where you could pre-select, I want to have a colt from this particular combination, or I really want a filly. So they have that capability, but not yet on a commercial level. So the technology is there, but it hasn't distributed out to actual practical use yet. But that's something I think we'll all be watching and anxious for, because as breeders, we often have a specific goal of we'd really like to get a filly to continue on a mare line, or we're hoping for a stallion prospect, so we're really hoping for a colt for a specific combination. So that will be interesting to watch and develop. We haven't used it here, but some of our breeders have been doing ovum pickup and ICSI, where they're usually dealing with either a mare with reproductive issues or a stallion with fertility issues, because you only need a very small amount of semen that you're dealing with in those processes. Actually, you're using a single cell. So that can help with some fertility problems, again, of those exceptional individuals, because your cost is going to be higher on those breedings. So, but our average general breeder, general stallion mare combination, it actually hasn't changed all that much lately.
Now, what's trending in terms of breeds then, Natalie? Do you have any pointers there as to what's become fashionable in Europe that's being adopted here?
In terms of technology or what we're seeing with the breed registries?
With the breed registries.
With the breed registries. So there's been in the last 5 to 8 years, especially, sort of a consolidation of some of the smaller registries within Europe, particularly within Germany. We've seen a number of the southern German breed registries consolidate into one. We've seen recently the Rhineland come under sort of the management and the overriding book of the Hanoverian Verbond. That has now transpired here in the U.S. as well. So I think the sort of loyalty breeders tended to have to one particular registry isn't as strong as it was perhaps in the past, and they're looking at the registries more as a customer service end. What's allowing me the registration options I want? What is providing me the best marketing or support for my foals? And so the registries are having to adapt to that a little quicker in terms of how they manage their numbers and support.
Okay, well, finally, let's consider a few tips, if you would, Natalie, for mare owners at this time of the year.
Mm-hmm. Definitely start your research early. Ask lots of questions from your trainers, riders you know. They have a great insight on what they want to ride, and we can't forget that as breeders, that we are breeding eventual riding horses, and so what those riders want is what we need to be breeding. Talk with your vets, especially if you're new to breeding. Try and get a outline of what's coming down. What questions do you need to ask? It's hard as you get into it. You're not even sure what you don't know. The breeding community is a small, very passionate group of people. They love talking about their horses, what worked, what didn't work, different breeding combinations. So, find ways to connect with other breeders and use them to help gain experience and further your research. Nothing replaces seeing horses in person. You know, we're lucky today we have access to lots and lots of video online, lots and lots of photos, and those are great tools, you know, especially in this country. I know we're spread out. It's hard to go see horses in person, but nothing can quite replace that of getting to see the stallion itself, talk to its rider or its owner, and just be there. It's like looking at sales horses. It's so much better if you're there in person. Breeding, I think we have to be careful and remember it's just the first step. I always say Grand Prix horses aren't born, they're made. And we have to have a plan for how we're training our young horses and what, you know, what the next steps are after that foal successfully on the ground. What is the plan? Are we selling it as a foal? Are we keeping it to develop? Do we have a trainer to help us with that? Or is it a horse we're going to, you know, you have enough experience and you've done young horses before and you want to bring it up on your own? You know, we need to have a plan beyond just the breeding. It's also a little bit addicting. You know, if you think I'm going to breed just that one foal, I want just one special foal from my mare, you know, be forewarned when all goes well, it's a lot of fun and you're going to want the next foal and the next foal. And you kind of get sucked into the cycle of being a full-time breeder.
Yeah, absolutely. It soon becomes almost an addiction once you have that foal on the ground. You want another
one. It does. Absolutely.
Is there anything else you would like to add, Natalie?
No. I mean, thank you. Thank you so much. And, you know, I'm glad to see more people talking about breeding and showing interest in it.
Well, I want to thank you again. That's Natalie DiBerardis, who is the farm manager of Hilltop and co-chair of the Sport Horse Committee here at the USDF. We really appreciate you taking the time to come on the program, Natalie. Thank you so much.
Anytime. Thank you.
And in our next segment, we're going to be hearing from Haggard Equine Medical Institute veterinarian Karen Walsdorf, who's going to tell us about embryo transfer and other options for mare owners.
Dr. Walsdorf graduated from the University of Florida in 1992. In 1996, she joined Haggard Equine Medical Institute as an associate, and in 2002, she became one of the first two women members of the practice. Dr. Walsdorf's main interest is in infertility in the mare and problems during pregnancy. She spends her time working as a field veterinarian and as a specialist at the McGee Fertility Center. She has also authored many chapters on equine reproduction, as well as lectured worldwide and published research. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Can you start out by telling us what is embryo transfer?
Well, embryo transfer is a procedure by which we're able to breed a donor mare, and then she will go ahead and ovulate, and then we can come back anywhere from 6 to 8 days, usually post-ovulation, and we're able to flush the embryo from that mare's uterus. We then take the embryo and we place it into a recipient mare, and that recipient mare then kind of acts like a surrogate mother for the developing embryo and foal, and then eventually we'll go on to have that foal and raise it like her own. So it really allows basically a mare to have not only one potential offspring, but potentially more, two in one season.
So why would somebody want to do an embryo transfer?
Well, there are a couple of different reasons. The first one, and probably the majority of mares in this day and age, is because they're performance horses. They're competing at horse shows, and so this allows the mare the ability to have a baby and produce reproductively without actually being off for 9 months or 11 months. She's able to continue to work, and we can then do this procedure around her showing events. And so she stays in work and she has a baby at the same time. The other is that it allows wider gene pool. So some breeds will allow mares to have more than one embryo a year, and so they can have 4 or 5 different babies to different stallions in 1 year, which she can't obviously do naturally. And then probably the last reason would be for mares that have some kind of illness that aren't able to carry the uterus, that may have laminitis, and that when a mare is in foal, she gets heavier, puts more pressure on the feet, and so it causes her more pain. So with this method, you're able to therefore get a baby out of a mare that may not be so great environment when she's actually
so maybe like some of the older mares that
So especially like in older mares that have big baggy saggy uteruses that may have chronic infections that it takes a lot to get them cleaned up, or their uterus is not a good environment because of age and lots of foals, this you can still get an embryo from that mare and let it be put into a younger, healthier uterus that is better for the growth and development of the baby.
Yes, that sounds like a great option. So how has the popularity of embryo transfers changed in the sport horse world, and why do you think that is?
Well, I think that people are recognizing more that it's a viable option, and that they can still continue to work their mare, like I mentioned before. And so all the breeds, really, except for thoroughbreds, allow embryo transfer to occur, and then you just have to check on what breed-specific requirements are for embryo transfers, because some will only allow one of the foals to be registered a year, some allow more than that. But it gives the owner a greater diversity with what they can do with the mare, both work-wise and reproductive-wise.
So you told us a little bit about how it works, but could you maybe go into a little bit more detail about what the mare owner would be looking at as far as thinking about embryo transfer?
So there are two parts to the story. The first part is the donor mare, right? And that's the mare that we're going to be getting the embryo from. And that mare is basically whatever you want her to be. A lot of times they are the older mares, that especially that we see at Haggard's, because they have problems. But there certainly are lots of practices throughout the United States that do it routinely on normal performance horses. So anyway, what you need to do is you need to get that mare cycling and get her ready to be bred, meaning she needs to go through a culture and cytology, monitor her through her cycle so that we know what is the best time to breed. While we're doing that, we also need to make sure that we have recipients that are synchronized and are cycling the same way as the donor mare. Because what you want to do is you want to take that embryo from the donor mare and place it into the recipient mare at pretty much the exact same time in her cycle, so that they are synchronized in their cyclicity. Because you can't take one mare that's ovulated 6 days and put it into a recipient mare that's ovulated 13 days ago. There is a mismatch then of the embryo and the uterine environment. So what we do is we'll breed the donor mare, make sure that we come back, she's ovulated, and then we'll come back at 7 or 8 days post-ovulation. We will take a catheter and pass it through her cervix, attach it to fluids, and we flush fluids into her uterus, and then we flush them back out. And when it flushes back out, there's a collecting dish that has a filter on it that allows the embryo to collect into this dish. It's actually quite amazing.
Wow.
You can't see it with your naked eye. And so what happens once you've flushed this mare, you take that collecting dish and you put it under a searching microscope, and you're able to find that embryo in the microscope, and then you're able to put that into a pipette, and then you take your recipient mare, and you're able to transfer that embryo through the cervix of the recipient mare and place it into the mare's uterus.
Wow, that's amazing. What is the average success rate of the embryo transfer?
So, like we've been talking a little bit about the donor mare. So it very much depends on the donor mare. A young mare that, you know, has maybe had one foal or two foals is probably going to be a better success rate than an old mare that has chronic inflammation or has fluid because of her conformation. So it really depends. But on average, when you are able to recover an embryo, usually about 70 to 80% of the time. But then you have to remember that you're manipulating the embryo, you're transferring it into another mare. And so usually you'll actually get a pregnancy in the recipient mare about 70 to 80% of the time that you transfer the embryo.
That still sounds pretty good. typically, how soon after the transfer can you determine if the recipient mirror is pregnant?
Well, you can usually, the earliest that we can see embryo on ultrasound is about 11 days post-ovulation. So if you flush the mare at day 6, then you can look at her day 11. If you flush her day 8, you can look at the recipient mare day 11. So day 11 is usually the earliest. I personally like to come back at day 13 or 14 post-ovulation. The embryos are a little bigger, and so you're able to see them more easily. But you can anywhere from 11 days to 14 days would be ideal.
Okay, great. And what kind of mare makes a good embryo donor, and what kind of mare makes a good recipient?
Well, the donor mares, you don't often have a choice of what makes a good one or a bad one, because the procedure is one that you're going to do to her, whether it's good or bad. So you'd like her to potentially have had a couple of foals, has a history of no foaling injuries, and is young, so she has good healthy eggs and a good uterus that she's able to clear fluid around breeding. However, we don't always have that. A lot of times our performance horses are older maiden mares because they have gone through their performance career. They're getting to the end, and so they're starting to think about breeding them while they're still maybe the last couple years. So they're a little bit more difficult in that because they're 14 or 15 years old, their cervixes have never had a baby or expanded. Their cervixes remain pretty tight all around breeding, and so they can sometimes accumulate fluid in that process. So they're a little bit more challenging, even though they've never had a baby and they're young. And then you have the other extreme, that are the older mares that, again, will have issues just from having lots of foals, having more scar tissue in their uterus. So it's really dependent, again, how are you going to manage the mare on what her problem or her situation is. Now, for the recipients, that is a key, because you don't want to go to all this work to do an embryo, get an embryo, and then put it into a bad oven, so to speak, right? We want this embryo to cook and to grow in a healthy environment. And so the recipients that we like to put our embryos into usually range between 7 and 10 years. Preferably, they will have had a foal or two, so their cervix is relaxed. We know what they're like as a mother. You want them to be easy to handle because you're going to be working with them a lot. And so we want the best uterine environment for that embryo to develop that we possibly can have.
Yes, that makes good sense. Can horse owners register multiple foals by the same mare on the same year?
So it depends on your breed, and that's where you need to check with your breed registry. You can, in like the quarter horse industry, you can have numerous foals by different sires in the same year. With the standard bred industry, you can do numerous embryo transfers, but you can only register the first foal that's born. So it really is very breed dependent, and I would recommend for everybody to find out what their breed specifications are before they get into this.
Okay. Are there any breed registries that do not allow embryo transfer?
The only one that I know specifically is the thoroughbreds.
Okay.
Okay, any kind of artificial anything is not allowed in the thoroughbreds, unless, of course, you're not going to register them, or you're going to, if you have like a thoroughbred cross, or you're going to use your thoroughbred as a show jumper, you know, then of course you can, but you will not be able to register it within the thoroughbred breed as a racing horse.
Okay, so like the jockey club registration.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right, well, great. That's all really great information. Is there like maybe three things that you could tell us that people thinking of looking into embryo transfer should know it?
The biggest thing is to think about who you want to breed your mare to. Make sure that your donor mare doesn't have any infection in her uterus, and that she's healthy and has a good environment there. And then also try and recognize what you're going to do about recipients. So there are different options with recipients. Some people will have their own recipient mares. You need to probably have at least 2 recipients per donor mare, because synchronizing those mares to cycle together can be somewhat difficult. So you want to have enough recipients for your donor mare. And the options there are either you have your own recipients, or there are also centers, recipient mayor centers, that you can contact and say, hey, I want to do an embryo transfer. They'll send you a contract so that you know what it entails to ship the embryo to these centers where they have large numbers of recipient mayors that you can transfer the embryo into, and then you will then get your mare back when she's pregnant. So it's mostly getting ready with that to know where you're going to do what with the embryo.
And can they find those centers? Like, can they search for it online? Or
okay. Yes, absolutely. They're recipient herds. Okay. And so if you Google embryo transfer recipient herds, there should be a list.
Okay, and we'll try to put a link to that in our show notes also. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. I really appreciate it. I hope you'll come back sometime and talk
to
us again.
And I'd love to. Thank you.
All right.
And finally, we have a couple of reminders. First of all, that prize money totaling over $180,000 will be awarded at the 2018 Great American Insurance Group USDF Regional Championships. This prize money will be divided evenly among the 9 regions and 35 divisions that are offered, allowing each region to present competitors with over $20,000 in prize money and awards. Champions in every region and division will receive $350 in prize money, an engraved silver tray, and an embroidered jacket and gift certificate provided by SmartPak, the official supplement feeding system of the USDF. Reserve champions in each region and division will receive $233 in prize money, along with a saddle pad provided by the Great American Insurance Group, the title sponsors of the championships. And you can find more information regarding the Great American USDF Regional Championships by visiting our website at usdf.org. And the USDF offers duplicate and replacement all breeds medals, rider award certificates and medals, and horse performance certificates for a nominal fee. So if you've lost a rider award medal or patch, or would like to gift your trainer with a duplicate all breeds awards medal, please contact the USDF for assistance. And that is our show for this week. Don't forget to follow us on social media. Find out when the next episode will be published. And if you listen to us on the website, you can also download us to any podcast app from iTunes, so you can listen to the show on the go. But while you're on the website, be sure to check out eTrack for more educational information and resources. I'll be back in 2 weeks' time with another episode of the USDF's official podcast. Until then, remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.